88 FM, 5 past 11. And I promised you earlier that just after 11, I would be introducing you to someone who I consider a special guest. And I'm sure that once you have been in conversation with us for a while, you'll know why. Trevor Wolfe has become, well, in Bolito terms, he is an OG, you know. This is an original gentleman. And his emporium, his food emporium, Al Pescatore, is well-renowned for food and ambiance and staying power. I think I'm right in saying that it is the oldest continuing restaurant in Bolito. When I say continuing, oldest, the restaurant that has been extant for the longest, and to stay the test of time in the food industry is not easy, particularly considering the challenges that we have faced as a local economy over the past couple of years. So it's a very warm welcome to you, Trevor. Lovely to have you on the Dave Charles Show.
Thank you. I take it as an honor, really, being here. It's wonderful.
Thank you for that vote of confidence. And we're being so polite to each other, we must now stop this nonsense. Get real. You've been part of the local scene for a long time, but you didn't grow up here, did you?
No. I was born and bred in Cape Town, in a place called Milnerton. I don't know if you know Milnerton. It's on the beginning of the West Coast, and went to school at Milnerton High. Didn't do too well there. I always remember a principal saying to me, he pulled me and he said, because I was ADD and dyslexic and they didn't know what it was much about, and he said, when you get to matric, the books that you're going to have are like phone books. And he pulled out a phone book and he said, I suggest you do something else and you go to a commercial, what are those schools?
Technical high.
And I said, no, I'm going to make matric, and I did. And I did it pretty well in the end, once I didn't have to spell anymore, read books. And yeah, I started at Milnerton, ended up at college, and then after that I had to do my Navy service. I was a medic in the Navy, which really taught me a lot about life skills. And
did you ever go to sea?
Yes, very much so. I was in a torpedo recovery vessel, which recovered all the torpedoes from the submarines from those days that did go out to sea. And it was a bunch of divers. We had an absolute jaw in those days. I remember the captain, he was quite something. He'd say, come on, we need some food today. And we'd go around Cape Point where no one could see us. And then the divers would go and dive Perlamoor, so much so that the rubber duck would start sinking, coming
wow.
in. And we'd have wonderful Perlamoor stews at night on deck. And I was a medic. I always wanted to be a medic. I actually really wanted to be a doctor. But unfortunately, I never got there. But yeah, I had 2 years of us. I saw what went down in the border in the great Moscow push that was in 1977-78. I was at 1 mil. We were meant to have our second phase there. And
were you at 1 mil in 76?
Yeah.
I was next door to you.
No ways.
Yes. I was in the entertainment unit, and our little house was right next to the nurse's home.
You're kidding me. So that, you remember the wooden building?
I do.
Yeah.
And it was peculiar because in those days, well, you know, there was this military establishment that was very, very prominent in terms of its excellence for medical care.
Yes.
1 mil hospital. And right next door to that was a bunch of absolute reprobates that had come from different. It was a bit like Kelly's Heroes. All
yes.
the oddballs in the country, just a little tiny handful. And we used to, when we were there, we would do the occasional rehearsal at night for the nurses.
Oh, wow.
And they would come across, and we would have a wonderful time. I wish I'd known that you were there. I would have invited
yeah.
you.
Yeah, we were there when the big push happened, so that was quite gnarly.
Yeah, I
remember
that.
We went into high security wards in those days. I don't know, 100 guys.
People don't realize what was happening because it was kept very quiet. But
yeah.
but if you were in the jaws of the beast, you saw largely the injuries from, I got to say, you know, from accidents. And there were some combat injuries as
yeah,
well.
Yeah.
But youngsters whose lives were altered irrevocably and irreparably. Now, I remember, in fact, because I'd been in an artillery unit before I was transferred, and my guys from one medium battery, 4th Field Regiment, had gone up into some terrible action and had subsequently, you know, come back. But one of these get-togethers, one of the nurses said, you were in the artillery, weren't you? I said, yeah. She said, yeah, I know there's a guy in the ward that's been asking about you. He said that you were in the entertainment unit. I said, oh, really? Anyway, it turned out he was in my bungalow originally in basics. Oh, and I thought, well, I said, is he okay? She said, well, he'd probably like to see you. And I popped along. I was fully expecting, this guy was, funnily enough, he was a nice Jewish boy from Durban. Really? Danny Cohen, I promise you.
Danny
Cohen. Yeah, surfing dude, and I loved him madly. You know, he was full of life. And when I saw him in that hospital bed and he'd lost a leg.
Oh, bad one.
And, you know, his life was
changed
completely. Yeah. And there were so many stories like that. I'm glad that the world has moved past it to a degree. Well, the world has. South Africa has moved past it. The world seems to be heading back into nasty stuff like that. But I think there's a difference between guys of our generation that went through that
time.
People said, you know, it was a good idea to turn you into a man. Maybe. I think we also carry the scars, but certainly it was an experience that you will never forget, I'm sure.
Without a doubt.
I will never forget. And there's so many guys roaming around with post-traumatic stress to this day that don't even realize they've got it. Yeah. So we survived. How lekker. And we survived to end up in a beautiful part of the world. How did you come to Belito?
So after my national service, I joined, you're going to laugh now, I needed a job. I'd left home. My mom said, I can't deal with you going jawling and coming back home and not telling me where you're. There weren't cell phones in those days. So she was I had a wonderful mother, but she knew the bird had to fly. So she gave me 2 weeks and I ended up shacking up with another chick that wasn't my girlfriend. But nevertheless, and we started, I needed an income. So my brother was a regional controller.
Were you quite a player? You a ladies' man?
I was a bad boy.
Good-looking boy.
I was a bad boy. Oh. Anyway, so
okay, we'll so, get into that later.
At that stage, oh, we'll pass on that. At that stage, my brother was a regional controller for Josh Adore, which I'm sure you remember. You have an uncle in the furniture business. And he said to me, there's a guy who's looking for a rep selling vacuum cleaners. I thought, oh my, I really don't want to do this. So anyway, I went for the interview, not really giving a damn. And it was a guy called Richard Nunez. He came to South Africa to play soccer, tall Spaniard. And we just talked SH1T together and we had a laugh. And he phoned me the next day and said, you got the job. And I was like, oh dear, I really didn't want this one. But I took it because I needed the money. And I ended up working for Electrolux in Columbus. Do you remember the Columbus polishers, B-52s?
I have to tell you, I don't, but I know what you're talking about.
A vacuum cleaner, nothing. Anyway, I was there when they went into the Nothing Sucks Like Electrolux advertising campaign. And I saw a lot, and then I got my big break. There was a company called SATV, you'll remember them, Pioneer.
Oh, yeah.
In their heyday, and Telefunken. And they approached me. They saw me schlepping through Woodstock with cricket bags with vacuum cleaners in. And the big boy came to me and said, Trev, we want you to work for us. And I got the job. And that was my big break in life. I worked for Pioneer, Sony. I then worked for Tascam and TIAC, which I'm sure you remember, Tascam Porter Studios. And then eventually I worked for Sony. And at that stage, probably 10, 11 years in the industry, I realized I had to go and work for myself. I saw these old reps schlepping down the road with their suitcases and flat feet. And I just realized that I had to somehow work for myself. And there the connection happened because Peter Braham said to me, he worked for Philips. We were big mates. I was with Sony. He was with Philips. And he said to me, listen, Trev, I'm going to a place called Belito. My brother-in-law has a restaurant there called Mariners. And I went, Belito, I've never heard of it. And that's how the connection started. I came out here on Christmas Day, or just before Christmas. Nicole was 8 months old, and I had nothing to do, so I joined them, and I worked behind the bar in Mariners. And then they came to me and said, we want to open an Italian restaurant in Belito.
Wow, so it was really just happenstance that brought you here.
It was meant to be.
And from your days as a salesman must have stood you in good stead in the restaurant business.
Well,
because you learned to read people, I'm sure you
did. Yes and no. I mean, we did at Pioneer, they insisted we did a postgrad, so I did a Chamber of Commerce sales management diploma, which kind of helped. But I've never been a numbers person. I've been a people's person. So that helped me a lot. What I wasn't ready for was staff. It was very different in Natal. And I battled in the beginning with staff. But
what is it about? And funnily enough, your concern is one that is repeated time and time again throughout the business people that I've chatted to. It seems that it's almost, and this area in particular, is notorious for problem staff. Why?
I'll tell you, in the first month, I think, I employed two chefs. I didn't know. One was Zulu, one was Xhosa. And within a month, they were trying to kill each other in the kitchen. For me, it was so foreign coming from Cape Town. So I soon learned that there's a political thing almost that you've got to consider when you employ people, who you employ. And I learned quickly that you've got to employ actually within the family of the people that are in your restaurant. That's how it works.
And do you have family working for you?
A lot.
So your company is pretty much an extended family.
Yes, without a doubt. And our whole modus operandi really is we are family, we work together, we work for one another. That's the way we've worked going forward, and it really does work. So little things like we pool our tips to everybody. So it's that we all work for one another. If someone's out of line, it's like college boys. The senior staff will sort out the one that's out of line because they know that he is affecting their tip at the end of the day. It works very, very well.
So you mean if a waitron, what is the correct term for someone that serves at a table?
Waiter.
Used to be waiter, waitress, and I then became waitron. So a serving person comes to you and gives you extremely good service, and you say thank you. End of the meal, I'm going to just include a tip, 15% or whatever it is. You mean he or well, she doesn't get that money?
No. She does and she doesn't. So I think, no one leaves because our system works. So what we have almost a three-tier system. The tip is pooled, and it's pooled to runners, waitresses, chefs, and cleaners, a percentage of who does, of course, the majority of work. And the most important thing, in my opinion, really is the kitchen, because they work themselves to death. They deserve a percentage of that tip. Then they all get a salary, which is a lot of restaurants don't do. And then we give a commission. So when our waitresses come and show you the cakes or the fish, they get a big slice commission off that as well. So they get a three-tier salary, which is very good, because I can tell you without a doubt there's people out there that are only earning tip, which I think is very wrong. And those people can do a table of 10 and walk away with a 10 rand tip. My staff never have that problem. They've always got their salary, their commission, and then a percentage of tip. And I think it works. Well, it must work because our service levels are good, you know.
Indeed.
And people don't leave.
Let's take a musical interlude. We'll take a breather, catch our thoughts, and be back on the flip side. And we're back with my special guest, Trevor Wolf. He is the proprietor of Al Pescatore, one of the most famous and beloved restaurants on the Bolito Strip. And we're kind of just chatting. We're free-flow chatting, because this Dave Charles show is really about finding color. You know, when I talk about color in life, black and white is dull. When you find gems, in terms of people that have got stories to tell, it adds the color. So this is radio in full color.
Thank you.
So, Trevor, we were talking about the staff that you seem to, as the proprietor, have a great fondness and affection for, which is so refreshing, because I've heard many bosses complaining so bitterly about, and it's almost like a continual antagonism,
yeah.
You know, us and them situation. But your restaurant, and it feels different. You walk into Al Pescatore, it does feel very different. There's a genuine welcome. And I'm not blowing smoke. I mean, we chose to even have our little Christmas celebration there end of last year, because it was just so lekker. And it's changed a lot. It always had this magnificent sea view. I mean, you're right on the beach. And you you can't get closer. But it was on top of a pub that was, maybe the pub was a kind of different vibe, and people, I think, maybe had been a little confused between upstairs and downstairs. Not anymore. No. I mean, now the upstairs section, if you can call it that, of your building, well, it's just gone through a complete metamorphosis. What is behind the change?
Oh, without a doubt, Nicole, who's sitting right next to me over here.
Oh, we have to pan across to see if we can find her.
So, Nicole was very lucky. Things I didn't have in my life. She went to a private school and then she got a postgrad, both things that I've never had, and I'm very proud of her. And she did interior design and architecture, which at the time after she did this long course, came to me and said, I'm not sure if I've done the right thing. And I went, oh, like any dad, did I spend that money for nothing? But I definitely didn't. Anyway, then Nicole went, she worked for me for a bit, and because she's a pretty girl, she was offered a job in the wine industry, which we can talk about now. She was absolutely amazing, 6 years, which gave, again, her a grounding in wine that I don't have. And then she toughened up a bit and worked for, your TNT, which was, I think it toughened you up, FedEx. That toughened Nicole up a bit, and then ended up with Valens. And eventually she decided to get married, and after marriage comes children. I warned her not to, but she did. And after that, I said to her, you can't work for corporate and bring up a child. I mean, it just doesn't work. So Nicole came back, and she's really, she didn't just jump on her dad's yacht, open a sunbed and add the suntan lotion. She built the yacht into probably double the size that it was before. And how she did that, well, Nicole, we can go over it together. But what she did, basically, first the interior design came in, and she said, Dad, we've got to change this color's got to go, this has got to go, bars
got to
go.
So she used her interior design nous, all the skills that she'd learnt,
yes,
at college, were put to practical use. Her wine skills were also similarly brought to bear.
Incredible.
And her bubbly personality has added to that. It's a pity that she's not in our conversation. Next time we'll have a three-way conversation. But as this is just a two-way, you're a proud pop.
Very much so.
But you also, we are of an age, and you must feel the tug of the rocking chair and the slippers, and time to maybe hand over to the younger. What do you feel about that?
I personally, inside, I'm 18 till I die. I don't feel old. I mean, I'm 68 now, and people are coming to me and saying, Trevor, when are you going to retire? And it hurts me deep into the core. I'm not going to retire. I'm going to stay there as long as possible. I love what I do. I love the people. I find it interesting. The body at times takes strain. It's natural for my age, but as long as Nicole will have me there, I'm hanging in. I'm going to be there.
It's an interesting thing life. That the world of the employed ends technically at pension age.
Yeah,
you are not. The company policy often prohibits even the most wonderful employee from continuing to deliver because of an age rule. That's it.
Totally
so
wrong.
Most folk don't have the choice of continuing, not in the same vein. People who are self-employed, I think, often don't have a choice either because you can't afford to stop.
Yeah.
But it's a very fortunate situation. You find yourself in a successful business where you could afford to stop, but you love it so much that you don't want to. Because then you, and I feel exactly the same. I come to work because I'm happiest here, doing what I love, with the people that I enjoy. Why would you stop?
I think the older you get, the more you realize how lucky you are to have, A, a business that's working, B, being with your family. I mean, Jenny's there, Nicole's there. It's just blessings over blessings. And every year when I was younger and I started the business, I'll be honest, I hated it. I said every 5 years, that's the last 5 years. But as you get older, you suddenly realize how incredibly blessed you are. On many levels. Firstly, as you say, I wouldn't be able to work now for corporate. They would have kicked me out long ago. But having your family around you and also your guests. The guests trust me and know me. So when people come in, there's a history straight away, you know, and that's incredible.
What are some of the most interesting people that who are some of the most interesting people that
I've got stories. Boy, one that really blew me away was still in the old restaurant many, many years ago. A couple came in, American, and this guy sat down. He was very interested in the way we were working, and we started talking. He said, no, he had circumnavigated the world twice on a yacht. I went, wow, how did you do that? He said, because I could see they were old for me, so they were probably late 40s. He said, well, you know, we look at the weather, and it's safe as long as you know when you sail that the weather's good. And I went, wow, what did you do then? He said, well, we bought an island. And we're going to open a hotel and restaurant. That's why he was very interested. And I asked him, well, how did you get there? He said, I was one of the original guys who started Microsoft. And it blew me away that this guy changed the world. The minute Microsoft went on the stock exchange, he bailed out. And he bought a yacht with his wife, and they just lived the dream. But meeting a guy, he was telling me how hard it was to launch Microsoft because he said that secretaries never knew how to use mice. And he said it was so hard to teach them from keyboard to go to mouse. And yeah, they evidently worked out of a combi. He was incredible. I just looked at this guy and I said, you changed the world.
And there he was sitting in your restaurant.
Yeah.
And hopefully changing the world to experiencing Al Pescatore, that changed his world.
I hope so.
You see how clever. Who else did you meet that has made an impression?
I've met a lot of sportsmen. I'm just trying to think of someone that really blew me away. You know, I've learned one thing in life.
There's a whole bunch of rugby players that live in Ballita. You must have seen all of those guys. And and some of the other sporting legends. And then there are the entertainment legends that have gravitated towards Ballita. And it's almost as if it's a little who's who bubble of excellence that people drift through. And sometimes one can be intimidated by this legend coming through the door. For you, not so much.
No. And I'll tell you why. It's the way I see life. Money doesn't impress me anymore, but people do. So I've met some very, very influential rich men that come in just like anybody else, no airs and grace, and they really impress me. Then you get sometimes people with big money quickly, and they're not that nice, and they don't impress me at all. But another guy that really I'll never forget, I met Chester Williams. And as you know, he's not here anymore. And he was such a decent, humble man. I think humility is the thing that really impresses me with
people. I was going to ask you, what impresses you about people? Because you meet people, that's your business, all the time. Humility and kindness, I think, is also hugely... Often people say, and it's in the restaurant business that you pick up, you go on a date. How does your new potential partner treat the waiter or the waitress? Because that is the first sign of what you're dealing with.
And you're so right there. So treat people like you treat yourself, without a doubt.
Getting back to the restaurant, because clearly it's something that you're extremely proud of, and quite rightly so. You have a reputation for extremely good cuisine, and there's always something special. What's hot at the moment at Al Pescatore?
We've actually, it's now out of season, we brought this to show you. So we're doing two specials now. We're doing a Tuesday special and a Wednesday special. And so let me show you firstly, can I squeeze it through?
Let's hold it up to the camera.
That's a Tuesday special, so we're doing a medium-sized paella or calamari and prawns with this beautiful herb sauce that I always also use in my fish, or a type of Italian-style olive oil seafood pasta. And that comes out with a glass of porcupine wine, and that's $185. It's a new one we're doing, and it's really good.
It's a good price for what you're getting.
But there's a better one. Then comes Wednesday special you've done, I think. It's a beef and beer special. So what we do there is we've got firstly my favorite Derbs pizza. It's a pizza with a very, very light cream curry with fillet steak and avocado on it. Or we have a really good traditional beef curry where we only use the best beef. We use rump or tomahawk offcuts done in a traditional curry, served, of course, with all your extras. Or we have our pasta, which is it's like an aglio e olio. It's olive oil, garlic, chili, and fillet and mushrooms in a pasta, which is really good as well. And that with a Vintook 500ml draft, and that's 175. So we're now trying to push the more quieter days in season.
Because it's really tough. I mean, look at the cost, your input cost, the cost of food has gone through the roof, and particularly, dare I say, meat has gone. Well, you know, we have a little problem with foot and mouth, which has affected the prices at the trade value, and then from there to the man in the street, it's become extreme luxury. And obviously, you've got to make a markup, otherwise, you're in business. You've got to pay the bills. So a night out nowadays can become, for the consumer, quite an investment, shall we say, in life. And I think, sadly, a lot of restaurants tend to cut either quality or size or both to try and keep things as they might have been 6 months ago. Yeah. And there's a disappointment factor from the consumer that is huge. And what is your approach, Trevor? I know that the customer is king, but how do you keep them happy?
So the first thing is never cut quality. I always think of a big burger operation, I can't mention names, that their burgers just got smaller and smaller and their sauce has got more runny. And one thing you've got to remember, that the customer remembers his last meal, and he comes in remembering, he knows exactly what he had. So you don't cut back on quality. Yes, we luckily can get our suppliers to help us a lot, like Vintook or Porcupine, where they help us get to that number, because they'll give us free stock in beer or free stock on wine, and then
you're able to then pass on the advantage to the consumer prices that are still affordable, which that makes a lot of sense. But I'm delighted to hear you don't cut quality, because so many folk make that mistake because needs must. And if you don't have the money to buy the stock, what are you going to do? Luckily, in your case, well established, and it's but of course, as you say as well, it's you're as good as your last meal, basically. It's a bit
without
like
a
showbiz,
doubt.
Good as your last show. So you can't drop the standards for 1 second.
No. And even after all these years, I mean, I often come to work when it's going to be a busy day. And you know, because you've been on stage, you get the little butterflies in your stomach after 37 years.
Oh, you have to.
We turned 37 on the 1st of May.
Wow.
37 years old.
You know, Laurence Olivier used to say that to young actors, if you ever start a performance without the butterflies, you are in the wrong business. You must give up and go and do something
without
else.
Without a doubt.
You need that adrenaline surge when you're forward-facing.
I always think every person, and we do a lot of people, especially in seasons, got to walk out happy. And the pressure to get, firstly, your food out at that quality fast is so hard. I mean, we've really, we analyze our kitchen over and over, and we're going to reanalyze it again. Because there's this balance between getting your food out fast enough, or what's acceptable. I mean, how long would you wait for a meal? I'm interested.
Well, look, it depends on the ambiance and the atmosphere and the company. Because in good ambiance and good atmosphere, with good company, you don't really feel the time, the weight of time heavily. Yeah. But if you're not in that headspace, then every second, if you're in an uncomfortable situation or you're really hungry, and it becomes almost interminable, the wait. But I would imagine it would be reasonable from order to deliver, if it's going to be fresh and fabulous. Yeah. 15, 20 minutes, would that be considered okay?
We all say about 20 minutes for at least the starters to get out. But in season, when you're very, very busy, it can be half an hour. It's just what it is. It's hard.
But you guys have a little circus going. The table's left is never left unattended for long. There's always someone circling past to talk maybe to offer customers. You, how's the drink? How's the what about this? What about that? And maybe just a sparkle. It's always
and also tell your customers where they are. So if it's slow, go to the table and say, look, I'm sorry, you're going to have to wait a little bit for your food. But let them know where they the worst thing is sitting and waiting.
Communication is key, huh? Yeah. Communication has always been, I think, the strong point at Al Pescatore. Trevor, it's been absolutely lovely reconnecting.
It's wonderful being here.
You definitely, I think, in terms of the title of the host with the most, you've got that.
Thank you.
And you've passed the baton, or you are passing it to your daughter, Nicole, who, one more time, let's have a little look at you. Very pretty girl. Takes after her mother, must it?
Definitely.
Yeah. So you're blessed. You've got a business that has got legacy because, you know, one likes to, I think, pass the baton to family.
Without
and,
a doubt.
And hopefully keeps the flag flying and the fires burning. And we wish you continued success for
thank you.
Very long time to come. And once again, thank you for joining me on the Dave Charles Show on this happy Monday morning. And the music continues.